Last year I was at a leadership meeting in a Catholic retreat center outside of St. Louis. We were to be there for 4 days, about 50 men who had come in from all over the nation. Most of us had not seen each other in a year. We had some new men who were in the group who had not been to this particular retreat before. We were seated around in a very large, informal setting in a conference room with 50 people while we were seated two deep. And since we were going to be there for 4 days in a retreat time together, why, we decided that we would begin the opening night by an informal time of introduction and catch up. And so we went around the room, and everybody had 3 or 4 minutes to simply say what had been going on in their lives. And it was the normal kind of thing. Some of the men were talking about the various societies that they had joined or they belonged to, or what was going on in their churches or what was going on in their lives, inflated reports of ministries and all of this kind of thing. And then we got to one man who was an Episcopal priest from Albuquerque, New Mexico. And when we got to him, he just dropped all pretense. And he said, "I don't want to talk about what everybody else has been talking about." He says, I need to tell you about what's been going on in my life and about the crisis that my wife and I have been through over this last year, that my family has been through over this last year." And then he went ahead to just open himself up and talk from his inner man. He said he and his wife had been married for 25, 26 years, had never had any serious problems before, and suddenly this year everything had kind of fallen apart. And he said, "I have been forced to face her and to face myself at a different level than I've ever faced her before and that I've ever faced myself before." And he says, I've not been pleased with what I've seen in her, with what I've seen in myself." And then he went ahead to say, "You know what it was that finally brought us together in unity?" He said, "It wasn't prayer. It wasn't the quiet times." He said, "It was the conflict. It was the conflict and the confrontation and the crisis that forced us to face ourselves." For he said, "We had been existing at a very shallow level all of our lives." And he said, "When this crisis entered," he didn't say what it was, but he said, "When the crisis entered our lives, it stripped away all of the shallowness and all of the superficiality, and suddenly we stood before each other spiritually naked. And we had to see ourselves the way we really are." I thought about that. I was thinking about that while this word was coming this week. And early this week, I knew that I had something that I wanted to share with you. And that little story kept running through my mind. I've been in public ministry for 30 years. 19 of those years here in Melbourne. And I have, across these years, reached some conclusions. Part of those conclusions drawn from what I have read in the Bible, part of what I have read from other people. The majority of it from my own experience, which makes me, I guess, an existentialist. The things that have happened to me. And as I have watched God at work in my life, and God at work in the life of my family, and God at work in the life of my friends, and as I have seen with my eyes, and I have heard, and I have felt with my hands what the Bible calls the word of life, I have drawn some conclusions concerning God and concerning who He is and how He treats us and how He expects us or wants us to react to Him, which is the very essence of life. And at the heart of all of that conclusion is this: if God has His hand on you, if God has called you, then you are called to be on the move. God never calls us to a static position in life. You are called to change. That is the call of God on your life, is the call to change. Now, that's also a call to growth. Because change, if it's not change positively, is the wrong kind of change. But you have been called into that. The only people who are allowed to remain in ruts are those who are dead. Or those who are in denominations. But you are called to move up. You are called to be on the go. You are called to change. You are called to growth. If you are not changing, if you're not growing, if there has not been massive change in your life over the last 2 or 3 years, then you need to examine whether you're still alive or not. Because God's people are called into the growth movement. Now, as I have studied through this over this last week, because I have been going through some rather deep changes in my life, I thought when I reached 50 years of age, 2 years ago, that meant that, well, I guess to some degree things are going to slow down a little bit. And there's certain things that 50-year-old men don't do. At least that's what I kind of surmised. I have found that instead of slowing down, there's all parts of me that are just going into action. They didn't even crank up until I was 50. They've just been kind of laying dormant over there, waiting until I got to that place, and then suddenly there's all kinds of wheels, there's machinery, never has worked before, that has gone to work inside of me and outside of me. I have found that there's certain things that youth never will experience, that you have to wait until you get to certain areas and ages of your life before these things even crank into motion in your life. And then when they do, it's a terrifying kind of thing. You've been walking by that piece of machinery for 50 years. It hadn't moved, and suddenly one day you walk by it, it's rumbled into life. All the gears are turning, the wheels are turning, and it reaches out and grabs you and pulls you into it. And that's terrifying. That's kind of frightening, because you've gotten used to the way things are. In fact, you kind of thought that now's the time to kind of lay back and begin to rust a little bit. I have found that God moves us on. Some of the most exciting changes of my life are taking place right now. Part of them are interior, part of them are exterior. I'm going through a huge thing, a transition in my life concerning, part of it has to do with my relationship with this church. What is going to be my relationship with Curry Vaughn? What's going to be my relationship with the leadership of this church? These are big questions I'm facing, and I have gotten kind of comfortable. There's certain things that I think are not supposed to change. Part of it has to do with whether I'm supposed to be here or not. I think God nailed that down a long time ago. But the outworking of that, the way that manifests itself is a whole different kind of situation. And that's been frightening, and at the same time it's been exciting. To realize that at this point of life, that God says, now I'm going to open some doors for you that I never would have opened before. That there's other things that are going to begin to happen to you. And I've just been peeking through the cracks a little bit to see what's out there. But I know that God is calling each one of us into movement, into growth, and into change. Now, as I have been looking through the scripture, trying to understand what's going on in my own personal life, I've discovered some things, rather exciting things. And one of them I discovered has to do with a whole concept that appears in the Old Testament. Let me tell you a story. When the children of Israel, group of Israelites, not even known at that time as Jews, still known as Israelites, or followers of a man by the name of Israel, going by the word of Habeiru, or Hebrew, which means wanderer. When they were in Egypt, they grew to a large number, became slaves to the Egyptians. And then God raised up a man by the name of Moses to lead them out of that slavery to a land that he had promised them, a land that he had promised them many, many years before. We call it a promised land, the land of Canaan, which is now the land of Israel. And so under the leadership of Moses, they left Israel. And you remember that story. It's outlined in the book of Exodus, of how they came out of Egypt, and after all of the plagues had taken place, and the firstborn of the Egyptians had all died, and the Hebrews had been saved during the Passover, and finally Pharaoh came and said, "Enough, get out of here." And they left following Moses, and they got as far as the northern portion of the Gulf of Suez, known as the Sea of Reeds. The Bible calls it the Red Sea, and I guess metaphorically speaking, it is the Red Sea because it's the northern portion of the Red Sea, which is about 400 miles south, 300 miles south. But they came to this large body of water, which is at the very tip end of the Gulf of Suez, about where the Suez Canal is now located. And there was no passage. There was no way to go through. And you're familiar with that story of how the Egyptians were behind and the water was in front of them. And they received a word from God at that particular point. It's found in Exodus 14. And if you'll take your Bible, I want to show you something this morning. If you don't have your Bible, well, you can learn it just as easily, perhaps, by listening to me. But Exodus 14, they're standing at the sea with the Egyptian army behind them and the water in front of them. Exodus 14, 15. "And the Lord said to Moses, 'Why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on.'" Tell the Israelites to move on. Now, that word move or move on, which is also translated go forward or set out. Sometimes it's used, the Israelites set out to go someplace, is the Hebrew word nasa. And it's used 89 times in the book of Numbers. Over and over and over again, we find the word nasa used, which has to do with a people on the move, pilgrim people. The hymn we sang just a minute ago alludes to that. "Guide me, O thou great Jehovah, pilgrim, through this barren land. I am weak, but thou art mighty. Hold me with thy powerful hand." And it goes on to say, "Open now the crystal fountain whence the healing stream doth flow. Let the fire and cloudy pillar lead me all my journey through." They were led by a cloud during the day and by a pillar of fire at night. And they are constantly on the move. For 40 years, they're in this wilderness experience. They're in the Sinai Peninsula being led. And every time we find the movement that's talked about, it's the Hebrew word nasa, which means to go forward. They set out. They went forward. They were moving. But something happens when they get to Canaan. They came all the way through, and you remember that story, only Joshua and Caleb lived through that whole period of time. Even Moses was left behind. And they leave what is now today's Jordan on the other side of the Jordan River. They're heading west now, down into the Jordan Valley, and they come to the Jordan River. And that's the last obstacle before crossing over into the land of Canaan. Now, you remember that when they crossed the Red Sea, that they went through with a miraculous kind of thing. Moses stood there, held his staff out over the water, and the wind blew and blew back the water, and they went through on dry ground. Not so when they got to the Jordan River. Something had taken place, and this time God said, "You'll not go through by miracle this time. This time you will go through by obedience. Miracles are for children. Obedience is for those who have matured." Now, that's not to say God didn't continue to perform miracles. He did. But he said, "I'm not going to guide you by miracle any longer. Now you have grown. Now I will guide you by obedience. Walk through And they said, but the water is at flood stage. It's rushing through this river on its way down into the Dead Sea. It's like a waterfall. Dead Sea being the lowest point on earth. And the water's flowing from the Sea of Galilee high up in the highlands of Israel, roaring down through this Jordan Valley. And they said, "It's how can we get through?" And God said, "Trust me. Put your foot in the water." And every place they put their foot in the water backed up until they got to the center of the stream and the water had backed up behind them and they went on through on dry land. But not because a man stood out there, a charismatic leader stood out there and held a staff over the water. No longer. Now this time it was the priests who went ahead of them, putting their feet in the water, and each time they did it. It was a different kind of crossing. And the word changes. The word for crossing, even though it's still the word, that's still in the English translation, it's still the same. But the Hebrew word changes, and it's no longer the word nasa. Now they use a different word, and it's the word abar. And abar means crossover, or it means pass through. And we find this word now, instead of the word nasa, which is used 89 times in the book of Numbers, we find the word abar used in the book of Joshua 29 times in the first four chapters. It's used. And it has a different meaning, a different connotation. You won't catch it as you read through the Bible because it's translated out almost the same, crossover or pass through. But the emphasis on the word is an entirely different emphasis. It's the emphasis of a decisive nature of a moment. It's not just a pilgrim group of people who wake up in the morning and the cloud has moved and it's time to be on with it, to wander a little bit more. No longer. Abar describes the peak moments of life. It's never used to describe a passage or a journey. It has to do with an epic event in life. Every time it is used with the crossing of a boundary, crossing of a river, which leads to a boundary, a crossing of a political boundary. In the book of Deuteronomy, we find the word used, and it's used, the same word is used to enter into a covenant, to cross over into a covenant. Now, the concept that is used here is a concept of conflict and confrontation and crisis. It's a concept of pain. To move on is not a painful experience. Anybody can move on because usually that movement means you go in circles. And that's what the children of Israel were basically doing in the wilderness experience. They were wandering. And that was not painful. Oh, it was painful in that they had to pack up their belongings, but they got to take everything with them. That's the whole concept of nasa, is a journey or a passage. But when we come to Canaan, there's a different word that's used. And now the word is the word abar. And basically it means to cross over and to leave behind. When you enter from one place to another, you cannot take the old with you. And so it's the whole idea of leaving behind. Let me read a couple of passages out of Joshua, and you'll see them here. Flip with me over to the first chapter of Joshua. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord. This is Joshua, the first chapter. If you found Exodus, just go ahead three more books and you're there. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua. The Lord said to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' aide, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people, get ready to cross the Jordan." To cross over. And here we have this whole new concept that is emerging. 21 times we find that word cross over or cross in Joshua, the third chapter. Early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from Shittim and went to the Jordan, where they camped before crossing over. The whole concept of crossover in the fifth chapter, the first verse. Now when the Amorite kings west of the Jordan and all the Canaanite kings along the seacoast heard how the Lord had dried up the Jordan before the Israelites until we had crossed over. Their hearts sank, and they no longer had the courage to face the Israelites. There is a new concept that God is giving to his children when they enter into Canaan. And that's a concept of you can't go back. Now, with the word nasa, which is the word of passage or journey, there's always a way back. In the wilderness, there was always the opportunity to go back. In fact, a man by the name of Korach finally rose up and said he would lead the people back. I'll take you back, he said. Moses is taking you in the wrong direction. He says, let's go back to Egypt. Things were pretty good there. Remember how they flavored everything with onions? You know, we don't have any onions out here in the desert. And we remember the wonderful food that we had in Egypt. They forgot about all the bacteria and everything else that they had there, the amoeba that got in their system. But said, remember the food. And you remember those little girls with their those little rubies in their belly button. You remember all those evenings by the campfire? And those were kind of nice, weren't they? Let's go back to Egypt. And there was always a tendency, and there was always the possibility of doing it. But when they come to the Jordan River and cross the Jordan, then there is no going back. In fact, from that time on, there is crisis after crisis after crisis, and each time they enter into it with the understanding that we can never return to where we were. The Christian life is not only a pilgrimage, and it is a pilgrimage, but there are times in the Christian life where you will enter a crossover experience. And if we had time this morning, I would ask each one of you to take a pencil and paper and kind of list these experiences in your life. Each one of you probably has 12 to 15 kind of experiences in your life that have been crossover experiences. These have been the great, gigantic, epic experiences of your life, where either you have been forced into a situation by circumstances, or by an act of your will, you have made a decision, and you know that having made it, you can never go back to where you were. It's done. The water has come back again on the other side. There's no way to get back over on that other side. You have entered from one nationality into another, and in doing that, you have renounced the old nationality, and you have taken on a new. You have made a choice for a mate. And even though there may be a divorce later on, you can never erase the fact that you made a choice for a mate. You entered into a covenant with a person someplace down the line. You had a child. Whether that child lives or dies, or you give the child away, or whatever else, there's still no way that you can ever erase the fact that you have brought life into this world. That is an epic-making decision. And there's no way to erase that. There's no way to pretend that it didn't happen. That's an abar. That's done. And there's no way to back out on that kind of thing. Now, as we read through the Bible, and especially as we get into the New Testament, we discover that spiritual decisions have that kind of impact on life. Once having made a decision for Jesus Christ, there's no way to back down on that decision. Jesus calls it born again. He says you are born again. Once you are born again, it's just like the first birth. There's no way to deny that you've had that experience. You've had it. It's yours. And you can't go back on it. It's something you've entered into, and the door has been closed on the other side. Now, you can try to sin. In fact, you can probably do a pretty good job at it, but all that does is make you unhappy, because the born-again Christian can never enter into sin and be happy in the midst of it. Because the only way you can be happy as a Christian is to ask God to bless what you're doing, and you can't ask God to bless your sin. You simply can't. You can't be involved in a relationship outside of marriage and ask God to bless that relationship. Now, you can go ahead and have the relationship, but you can't ask God to bless it. And if you can't ask God to bless a thing, then there's no happiness. There's no joy. You could go ahead and do it, but being out of the will of God means that you're in misery. at the same time. Once having met Jesus, you can't go back. Life changes. And it becomes both a birth and a death experience. Birth to a new life, death to the old life. Let me read you something that T.S. Eliot wrote a number of years ago. Eliot was writing about, he wrote a little poem called The Journey of the Magi. Some of you remember that. In which he describes the three wise men who came to Jesus at his birth. And then they went back to their former land, having met Jesus. And he's describing the suffering of giving up their previous world view because they have now embraced Jesus. And he closes out that marvelous little poem by saying, "All this was a long time ago, I remember. And I would do it again. But set down this. Were we led all that way for birth or for death? There was a birth, certainly. We had evidence, and no doubt I had seen birth and death, but had thought they were different. This birth, capital B, was hard and bitter agony for us, like death, our death. We return to our places, these kingdoms, but no longer at ease here in the old dispensation, with an alien people clutching their gods. I should be glad for another death." And so Eliot has captured that whole concept that having met Jesus, you cannot go back the way you were. Scriptures say that about those wise men. Said they returned another way. You can't go back the same way. And none of us, having met Jesus Christ, can go back the same way. We can't go back at all. Not only that, but we have to go forward. And that's growth. And that's change. That's leaving things behind and taking on a whole new way of life. Bruce Truett is here with his wife and baby. In order to get here, they had to leave a whole way of life to come here to begin to lead the youth in this church. They had to leave a very comfortable life back in New Jersey. And they had to leave loved ones, family. And it was a very, very painful kind of experience, and I'll not steal their thunder, and we'll let them come and talk about that someday. But it was painful. It was terrifying to have to walk away from parents and to have to walk away from loved ones who are infirm because God has said, "Do this and go there." And that's tough. That hurts. And you know that once you do it, you can't ever go back to it again. The Christian life is that kind of thing. It's the crossover life. And the day will come for each one of us when we'll not do it because we're forced by circumstances to do it, but we will cross over on the basis of our will. That's what God's looking for. He's looking for men and for women who will look out and will see the decision and will weigh it and will make a quality decision of saying, "This will I do because it's right, not because it feels good, not because I'm going to get more if I do it this way. But this I will do because it's right," not weighing the circumstances or even the results of it. The results may be very painful. Nobody else may like what you're doing. But I will do this because it's right. I will cross over. I will grow. I will take the next step. And then God leads you to the place to where you can say, "Now, I will do it." Not because I'm being kicked and pushed by God. We've talked about that for years around here. About all of us walking around with God's footprint on the seat of our pants. You can tell when you've been handled by God because there's a big print there. But God is waiting for a group of people who will come along who will not have to be kicked into Canaan, But we'll go because it's glorious and because it's right. We will do it because God has beckoned and has said, come. That's birth. And that's death. It's the cycles of life. It's the cycles of spiritual life. These are the crossover times for each one of us. You can list them in your own life. And if it's any encouragement to you, they keep right on going even after you're 50. In fact, Moses faced them when he was 80. Faced the most crucial one when he was 120. They continue right on, because if you are walking with God, there's always going to be a Jordan in front of you that you can cross over. And when you do it, you'll set your stones on the bank, and you'll set your stones in the middle of the stream, and they will be a sign to you, not only that God opened the waters, but that we'll not go back. We'll not go back. We will go on from this point. And so I want to come to you this morning and encourage you to say, to be a crossover people. Be a crossover person. Don't be afraid of the next crossing, because it's God who has brought you there. And the norm for the Christian life is change and growth. It's leaving behind that which you have thought was precious in order to pick up that which is even more precious. I'm going to read to you. Laura Watson gave me a copy of her little book, The Road Less Traveled, by Scott Peck, who's a psychiatrist. I'm going to read to you a little portion here before we leave this morning. What makes crisis of these transition periods in the life cycle? Why do the transition periods have to be so painful, in other words, problematic? The thing that makes them crisis is that in successfully working our way through them, we must give up cherished notions and old ways of doing and looking at things. Many people are either unwilling or unable to suffer the pain of giving up the outgrown, which needs to be forsaken. Ever tried to wear a shirt that you had when you were 9 years old and keep on wearing it? Some of you guys ever put on your old military uniform that you had when you were 18 and the pain trying to button that thing or zip it? Many people are either unwilling or unable to suffer the pain of giving up the outgrown, which needs to be forsaken. Consequently, they cling, often forever, to their old patterns of thinking and behaving, thus failing to negotiate any crisis, to truly grow up, and to experience the joyful sense of rebirth that accompanies the successful transition into greater maturity. Has anybody here grown up? No. Is anybody here growing up? I hope so. Let's stand together. I want you to consider for a moment as we get ready to leave. In prayer, I want you to consider the claim of Jesus Christ on your life. I want you to consider the call of Jesus on your life. There's not a single one of you here in this room that has not been called by God. And that call is ever upward, ever onward. It's the call of adventure. It's the call of change. Accompanying that will be pain, some fright, because it's always into the unknown. You may not know the future. Few of us do. But far more important is you know the one who stands in the future, who is the future, who holds the future in his hand. And by following him, you enter unafraid into the future. Guide me, O thou great Jehovah, strong deliverer. Songs of praises I will ever sing to thee. We place our hands, Lord, in your hand, and trust that you will lead us through this afternoon and this evening into tomorrow, and we will be unafraid. In the name of Jesus, amen. The Lord bless you as you go.